Kick me one of them funky ass beats.
Tune in Thursday, June 19th at 10 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast from What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch. We'll be showcasing the musical and visual artists at this year's festival with interviews, music, and interactions with the producers and participants, exploring what makes this such a uniquely immersive, entertaining, and intimate festival. Again, be sure to tune in at 10 p.m. Thursday, June 19th for our What the Festival broadcast here on KBOO Community Radio. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is having a contingent in the Pride Parade, and we would love it if you would join us.
Please let us know if we can count on you to walk with us in the Pride Parade, Sunday, June 14th.
We will be meeting at 10 a.m. in the area around the North Park blocks.
Join us, wave at people, be fabulous, be KBOO.
The parade steps off promptly at 11, and all contingent members are to be together and ready by 10:30 a.m.
Please join us for a wonderful, fun, and lively day at the Pride Parade.
Call 503-231-803 and ask for Ani at extension 213 for more information.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Portland. Good morning, Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This is Lynn. I'm here with Ani. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning.
And we are Positively Revolting again. We were off for a few weeks. Thank you so much, Lisa Loving, for being a dynamite fellow Positively Revolting feminist for us for those 3 weeks. We really appreciate that. And we apparently were... whoa.
You keep talking.
I am keeping. All right, and there we are this morning. We know how to do this. I tell you what, we do, we do, we do. So, apparently, while we were gone, folks were trying to whittle away more at women's reproductive rights.
Yeah, just because we took a break,
I don't think it's fair.
Doesn't mean that the forced birth movement, the anti-choice folks, also took a break. No, they did not. In fact, they've been sort of doing things double time. And so that's where we're focusing this morning here on Positively Revolting, because this is some really hideous stuff. It is mind-boggling how much movement is actually being gained every day in state legislatures around the country, focusing a lot on Texas, as the recent federal court decision has, let's just say, is putting restrictions on abortion providers that is basically closing most providers and making it so about 900,000 women, right? 900,000 women do not have an abortion provider within 150 miles of them. That's kind of an undue burden, near as I can figure, in actually trying to get medical services.
So that would be something you would have to take a whole bunch of time off of work to go there, come back, and who know? And what? I'm sure there's a 24-hour waiting period.
Well, and the waiting periods sort of are a state-by-state thing, too.
Right.
We can go over those in just a few. But it's phenomenal. And really, what's behind this? Is it really a fanatical concern for the unborn, for a fetus, for a zygote, for an embryo? Is it?
For a grouping of cells?
Because if it was, then one would think that there would be equal concern for, say, child welfare, say, nutrition, say, good schools, quality education, say, healthcare, that you would think that this concern would actually continue after the embryo, fetus, zygote, whatever you want to call it, exits the woman's body. You would think. But in fact, we don't really see that. So what is this about? It's about controlling women, and it's about controlling women's sexuality.
Yeah, because what happened to having the government stay out of my business?
Big government's fine as long as the big government is being used to restrict women's rights. So abortion, there are waiting periods state by state now. It's a very mixed game. There are 72-hour waiting periods in Utah, in Missouri, in Oklahoma, in South Dakota. In South Dakota, there is a law that prohibits the inclusion of weekends and annual state holidays as part of the waiting period. So if you say, you know, decide to seek your abortion on Friday, your waiting period starts Monday or Tuesday if Monday's a federal holiday. Right. So, Tennessee governor.
It's always good to have holidays.
Right.
Really fun.
Tennessee governor Bill Haslam signed a bill requiring women to wait 48 hours after consulting a doctor for an abortion. And so that's in Tennessee. That's a new increase in wait. 48 hours is Tennessee and Alabama. 24 hours are probably too many states to mention right about now. It's phenomenal. And again, these things are a serious. I mean, people are thinking, well, 24 hours, so what's the big deal?
But that's not you just make an appointment and 24 hours later you go in. It's that you go for counseling or the mandated ultrasound, which is an interesting thing that the governor of Wisconsin talked about. What a cool thing. Well, why are people upset about ultrasounds? He goes, it's such a cool thing to show your ultrasounds to people. People have them on their iPhones.
Yeah, there's a difference. There's a difference between a wanted pregnancy and a this isn't going to work for me pregnancy. So there's a difference. And perhaps he doesn't get that. Perhaps somebody like us should go explain it to him.
No, I don't want
to. I want a field trip. I want a recorded field trip.
And I want to see you do it. So
That's probably my fantasy for the day, because I got some great fantasies. Also, there are laws now passed that actually force doctors to lie to their clients, their patients. In several states, doctors must tell the woman that the fetus has an ability to feel pain. This is not actually medically conclusive. This, in fact, has been debunked. But hey, don't worry about the facts. We don't care what the facts are. We want to control women's sexuality and women's bodies. So in Alaska, in Utah, in Minnesota, in Oklahoma, in Arkansas, in Texas, in Louisiana, and in Georgia, your doctor must tell you, either verbally or in writing, that the fetus has an ability to feel pain, whether that's actually true or not. Personhood begins at conception. The doctor must tell the woman that personhood begins at conception in North Dakota. I wonder if that means in North Dakota, people can start drinking 9 months earlier than in any other state. That's what I want to know.
Maybe they can wear a little thing on their saying, "What? Listen, I'm lying. What you hear coming out of my mouth is a lie.
Yeah, that could, many creative ways, I'm sure, of getting around the legislators that want to control women's bodies. In South Dakota, in Kansas, in Missouri, and in Indiana, both things must be told to the woman. That's right. The fetus has the ability to feel pain, and personhood begins at conception in South Dakota, Kansas, Missouri, and Indiana. Indiana is just coming up roses this year, isn't it?
It's always been that way. It's just in the headlines now a little bit more. But, coming from that part of the country, I never remember Indiana being much of a rose to start with.
Oh, my, my. And then in several states, counseling needs to assert a possible link between breast cancer and abortion, even though that's never actually been proven. That's in Kansas, in Oklahoma, in Texas, and in Mississippi. Oh, and Alaska. So
I will say one just slightly bright thing is that the appeals court in Arkansas struck down the law banning abortion at 12 weeks that they tried for. Now, that's just a first try.
Right.
When that is tried, law violates, according to the court, a woman's right to terminate pregnancy at a point before viability of the fetus. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit said one little piece of sanity for the moment. But when they, that type of legislation starts being introduced,
it's a problem.
It's a problem because, they keep at it until...
It's sort of like a zombie. It just keeps coming back.
Very much like one.
So then we also have, of course, in Utah, actually, just to be fair, Utah, a physician may waive the requirement to inform women about fetal pain if the abortion is because of rape, incest, life endangerment, or a severe health problem, or if the fetus has a lethal condition. So Utah at least has some provisions for, acting in a humane and sensible way. Some provisions. Still, the rule is there to inform. Or should I say, to disinform. Also...
Misinform.
Just while we're at it, there's a Floridian legislation that passed that actually... excuse me, I have a hard time even saying this one. The Floridian law passed that it's sort of the scarlet letter. It was introduced by Rubio, stating that if a woman is seeking to give up the newborn for adoption, she must first put an ad in the paper talking about who she's had sex with to allow the biological father to intervene and perhaps to claim the offspring.
Get out.
Again, just a naked effort to control women and our sexuality. It has nothing to do with the rights of a fetus. It has nothing to do with
Did some old girlfriend give away one of Rubio's children or something?
It
sounds very personal to me.
To do with controlling women and our sexuality. So we have no rant control. We welcome your calls to join us in this effort of truth-telling and asserting the fact that women do have the right to control our bodies and our destinies, that, in fact, women are not incubators and that embryos are not babies. Right? This is our basic premise. We welcome you and welcome you to join in this conversation at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. You can also follow along on Facebook. You can find us there. We are Positively Revolting. Also, if you're interested in following along in the Twitterverse, you can find us on Twitter at Positive Revolt.
Or everywhere. Look out. So there's I read a great, just for homework or for your reading, there was an essay that was on the Huffington Post by Exo Jane about, I was pro-life until I accidentally, though I always find that funny, got pregnant. And it's about a very conservative woman who is engaged to be married to the right guy. They're married now, but finds herself pregnant. It was just not the right time for them to have a child, and ended up getting an abortion. She went through a lot of changes, but it all became real to her. The conservative mindset that she was in just sort of stopped fitting her life, as they say. Anyway, I'm not going to I wouldn't read the whole article because that would be a horribly painful thing for all of you to have to live through. But it's up on the Huffington Post. It's a great little piece. And then one of my favorite things this week was Governor of Texas, Rick Perry, who is, you know, the head of the Republican clown car to me. Well, but now he's smart because he has glasses. We all have that figured out now. He sort of boinged out last election cycle, but he's back. He's back, I tell you. And one of the things, his reasoning is so sharp that he, of course, is a champion of abstinence education because it's extremely effective, and blamed the rising teenage pregnancy rates on the fact that America is ignoring the Boy Scouts.
Yeah. Oh, because Boy Scouts are always prepared and would be... anyway.
Oh, he's so clever.
He wasn't actually thinking that, though. I can't imagine.
That was you. Anita Perry.
Me attempting to make sense of things.
Whose wife, who worked as a nurse before becoming the First Lady of Texas, was being interviewed by a gentleman at the Tribune Fest, made the remark that, and it was a long interview, and she made the remark that she made about abortion, and she said, it's really difficult for me. I see it as a woman's right. If they want to do it, that's their decision. They have to live with that decision. Something extremely sane, so you know that didn't work very well. Anyway, the man who was interviewing her actually said, oh, Mrs. Perry, are you making news? Of course, I don't think he got that either, but her husband... had one comment. He said, from time to time, we'll stick the wrong word in the wrong place and you pounce upon it. And I didn't get the irony there either, apparently. And Mrs. Perry has not been heard from since.
There
because
you go.
She made sense. Oh,
oh my, my. So, also, just wanted to point out that last year, this is not quite 6 months ago, there's a bill proposed in, Missouri. Republican state lawmaker in Missouri was proposing a bill that would require women seeking abortion to obtain notarized consent from the baby's father, even if he was physically abusive towards the woman. The bill's sponsor was State Representative Rick Bratton. In an interview with Mother Jones, he said that the bill had exceptions for rape victims and to protect the life of the mother. Women in domestic violence situations are not exempt from having to ask.
What state was that?
That's Missouri.
Because I remember the last time we were reporting on this a few months ago, there were women who were, I need to look up what state that was, but there was a woman whose attacker said if he got custody rights, he would, or there was something he was trying to bargain away prosecution. If he relinquished his custody rights, she would, that's right, because I remember it stuck in my mind, like with a brand. She would, if she relinquished, he would relinquish custody rights if she would not prosecute him.
Yeah, all manner of, this opens, of course, a large garbage can full of stuff, and you never know what is going to crawl out of it. Rick Bratton says to Mother Jones, just because the woman's in a domestic violence situation, he says, what does that have to do with the child's life? Just because it was an abusive relationship, does that mean the child should die? Okay, using the word child again, in place of, say, embryo, zygote, fetus, whatever you want. Yeah, child is a little, I think of, say, you know, something from a toddler state up. Before that, we use the word baby usually. Child generally referring to, you know,
someone out of the
independent
uterus.
Movement, let's just say.
Well, being able to breathe on their own.
Or something, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, just like, let's look at language. And I'm not just talking about inserting the wrong word in the wrong place occasionally. Thank you, Rick Perry. Brain trust.
Well, he's got glasses now.
Help me. Anyway, again, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I am appalled at the amount of legislation that has been brought forth state by state in the last 6 months.
It's a tsunami.
It really is. And it is just sweeping away women's rights and our control of our bodies and our sexuality. That is the goal. Let us not be deluded. That said, in what had to be the only good news of the week, there is, and it's a good news because the worst didn't happen. It's not because something good did happen. It's could have been so much worse. And when I'm settling for that as good news, there's something seriously wrong. Georgia woman is not being charged with murder in the case of abortion causing pills, the pregnancy ending pills. The Georgia prosecutor dismissed a controversial murder charge against a woman who delivered a fetus that did not survive after the woman took prescription medicine to induce an abortion. The woman had been charged with malice murder.
Is that the one that with child endangerment too? No, that was a different one. She was actually prosecuted.
She's actually convicted.
Yeah.
This is for
Kenlisa
Jones. She was being charged. Daugherty County District Attorney Greg Edwards released Kenlisa Jones on Wednesday of this week, stating that law forbids charging her for any alleged acts regarding to the ending of her pregnancy. Previously, she had been charged with malice murder. Jones had been held without bail since Saturday when a social worker told police that Jones induced labor by taking Cytotec pills that she had bought online. So there we go. Cytotec is a prescription pill used to treat ulcers as well as to induce labor. The social worker told police that Jones wanted to terminate her pregnancy because her boyfriend had broken up with her. It's unknown when the baby was actually due. Jones still faces misdemeanor charges of possession of a dangerous drug without a prescription.
Yes, it was Purvi Patel, who was sentenced to 20 years for feticide and neglect of a dependent on March 30th in St. Joseph County in South Bend, Indiana. What do you think about this, people? 503-231-8187.
Perhaps they're sleepy.
Perhaps their heads are exploding. Put the top of your head back down and give us a little call.
Or perhaps you just think it's fine. Maybe Lynn and I are out of touch. Maybe women do need to be controlled.
Yeah.
I don't actually think that you believe that, dear listener. But, you know, give us a call. Let us know that you are, in fact, there and that you give a damn about women's rights to control our bodies.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. And do it now. Don't everybody do it at 8:50 because then you won't get in.
So Kansas becomes the first state to ban a common form of abortion. That's dilation and evacuation for those keeping tracks of the names of medical procedures. Kansas is the first state to just outright ban that form of pregnancy termination. That was in April of this year. Again, there has been a surge in legislation that restrict and deny women's rights. I think that's rather important to talk about. We have so many examples, it's really hard to know,
you know,
where
yesterday,
to go from here.
Yesterday on Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman had a long segment about the assault on women's reproductive rights, and Heather Busby, who has the I would say non-enviable position of being the, she's the ex-director, so that's of NARAL, Pro-Choice Texas. Ooh, there's a job. And she literally at one point said, I think it was Rick Perry's other little comment about the fact that, well, that women have been raped, they've figured it out right away, and so they don't need any sort of extension on abortion rights. And she started talking about PTSD and other very important things. But I don't remember if it was Scott Walker's comment or another Rick Perry comment where she was absolutely speechless, which it never works well when you've got a show to do. But still, and she was an ex-director of NARAL. So or an executive director. I'm sorry. I put X here so I would give an abbreviation, and I don't even know my own abbreviations. She is the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. Bless your little heart, Heather Busby.
Yeah, there's a job.
Mm-hmm.
Katha Pollitt writes, Katha Pollitt,
we
love Katha Pollitt.
Yeah.
She has written in an article, it's the blog. Katha Pollitt is a columnist for The Nation. This was posted in Huffington Post. She says, abortion, we need to talk about it. She says, I know sometimes it seems as if we talk of little else, or perhaps I should say we need to talk about it differently, not as something we all agree is a bad thing about which we shake our heads sadly and then debate its precise degree of badness, preening ourselves on our judiciousness and moral seriousness as we argue about this or that restriction on this or that kind of woman. She says, we need to talk about ending pregnancy as a common, even normal event in the reproductive lives of women, and not just modern women either, but women throughout history and all over the world, from ancient Egypt to medieval Catholic Europe, from today's sprawling cities to rural villages barely touched by modern ideas about women's roles and rights. Abortion takes place in Canada and Greece and France, where it is legal, performed by medical professionals, and covered by national health insurance. Excuse me. It also takes place in Kenya, Nicaragua, and the Philippines, where it is a crime and women who terminate a pregnancy takes her life in her own hands. It happens just the same. According to anthropologists, abortion is found in virtually every society going back at least 4,000 years. American women had great numbers of abortions throughout our history, when it was legal and when it was not. She goes on to write that we need to see abortion as an urgent, practical decision that is just as moral as the decision to have a child. Indeed, sometimes more moral. Pro-choicers often say no one is pro-abortion. But what is so virtuous about adding another child to the ones you have already been overwhelmed by? Why do you make young women feel guilty for wanting to feel ready for motherhood before they're actually mothers? Isn't it a good thing that women think carefully about what it means to bring a child into the world? What, for example, it means to the children she might already have? We tend to think of abortion as anti-child and anti-motherhood. In media iconography, it's the fetus versus the coat hanger. That is, abortion kills an unborn baby. But banning it makes women injure themselves. Actually, abortion is part of being a mother and of caring for children, because part of caring for children is knowing when it's not a good idea to bring them into the world. The article goes on at length, but I thought that it's very important. In the 70s into the 80s, there was a phrase that was yelled from...
Pillar to post?
Yelled from the streets. I know I had it on a placard. I know I've yelled it several times. Abortion on demand without apology. There is nothing to feel guilty about. It is a medical procedure. It is our right. It is our control of our destiny. It is our control of our sexuality and our reproductivity.
And it's been going on forever.
Since birthing began. Yeah.
And it is our right to have a safe and legal
abortion. It is, in fact. And so that's sort of where I want to keep focused, is how do we get out of the moral morass, really, of, what language do we use? Let's think about carefully how to engage the hearts and minds so that we actually can say, no, it's okay. We don't need to apologize for abortion. We don't need to say, oh, yeah, we know it's a necessary evil. It's not. It's a medical procedure, and it actually helps people. It is not a necessary evil. It's a fine and beautiful thing. So, I mean, as much as tonsillectomies are a fine and beautiful thing, appendectomies, yeah, fine and beautiful things. You got it. It's a medical procedure. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and talk to you, dear listeners.
Sue.
Yes.
Hi, Sue. How do you do? What do you have to say?
To answer your earlier question, my head was exploding.
Yes, yes. See, I thought that was probably the problem.
As it always does when I hear the litany of all the crap that they're trying to pull on us again. This weird, odd idea. If we had passed the ARA, do you think that would have made any difference?
No.
No.
I mean, honestly,
I mean,
I would like, I goodness knows I did campaign
for it.
But
it's a nice thought. But it's a very nice thought.
And it seemed like perhaps it would be better. But I can't imagine that these neocons and that these, misogynists would not find ways around it or just trample it like they trample all the other constitutional rights that, you know, should be protecting us and our freedoms.
Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, they're an amazing crew. It's like all for the Constitution, except when it actually helps people, in which case, trample it. Don't pay any attention to it at all.
Their knowledge of propaganda and how to use it
is huge. Yeah.
Yeah, far better than ours. We need to work on that.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, thank you very much for your call this morning.
Bye.
Take good care. And let's go ahead and talk to Pat. Good morning, Pat. Good morning, Pat. You're on the air. So let's try James. Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. What say you?
Yeah. Well, I say that these politicians are crazy. I mean, it's ludicrous to... I mean, I always tell people that...
They're cray-cray.
Straight up.
Cray-cray.
What I tell most people is that these right-wingers, they're not pro-life. They're just pro-child because they want nothing to do...
They're not pro-child. Where do you get the idea that they're pro-child?
Well, they want the child. They want the child to be born.
They're pro.
They want
fetus,
But they don't want that. Once the child is born, they want nothing to do with it. I mean, they're sucking money out of schools. They're sucking money out of federal programs to help families. But it's like, oh, but look, we're making sure that this child is coming to term. But you know, it's just ridiculous. It's and you're right. It's a hardship on it's a hardship on families that are already overwhelmed by children, you know, and, you know, and taking away a person's right to think about what type of contribution they want to make to the world and what type of contribution they don't want to make to the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe pro-child, maybe it's just they're pro-birth or something.
I say they're pro-fetus, but they're not pro-child.
Okay.
That's just
pro-fetus.
Me.
I personally prefer the term forced birth.
Okay.
They're forced birthers. I mean,
yeah,
that's really
good.
What it's about, because
like
they're not really about prenatal health care either.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they're not doing anything to help the children along in any way, shape, or form. They just want to make sure that, this child needs to be born, you know, or you need to take responsibility for it, or, you know, when, you know, and it's always falling on the woman. It has nothing, you know, they're not passing any laws that are making men take care of the babies that they're fathering. They're just making sure that the women are having children that they've you know, been impregnated.
Yeah,
with.
Can't argue with you there, James. And that's why I say it's actually, I mean, really transparently about controlling women and women's sexuality. It's about taking women's power. It has nothing to do with morality. It has nothing to do with children, embryos, or anything else. It is purely control.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I think it's and some people might think this is being beaten to death with a stick, but it's like, you know, but those are the people who just, you know, they're at the point where they just don't want to, you know, I don't know. It's something that needs to be discussed, and it doesn't matter how much people feel it's being beat to death. It's something that still happens, and whether or not, and it's, you know, it's usually in the fringes of society where people don't notice. You know, usually see the, you know, they don't talk about the amount of poverty in low income neighborhoods, you know, neighborhoods of color where a lot of this stuff happens. And usually the people that this mostly impacts, you know, there's people with money who can have it done, but it affects people who have no money to be able to take care of these things.
Right.
Of their health.
Hey, James, thank you very much for your call. Take good care. And at this point, we have Jane. Good morning, Jane. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning. I'm really enjoying your discussion, and I just want to reiterate a lot of the points have been made already. That idea of, like, pro-fetus versus pro-child is, like, really gets to the heart of it. I feel like there needs to be more discussion about, like, after you have a baby, what happens then 5-10 years down the road. And I think what's really immoral is this, how they, like, really pull on the heartstrings of these people who are having children. Oh, you need to keep this baby, and it's, like, really emotional, and it's, you know, or you can give it up for adoption. And I just think it really puts then these moms into, like, a really difficult situation. And they don't talk about, are you ready to make an 18-year commitment? Are you financially stable?
18 if you're lucky.
If you're lucky, right. I mean, I just think there's all these other things. And then, like, some of these moms, they have a child, oh, and having an infant, oh, it's great, and there's lots of people around to support you.
And if that's your choice, if that is your choice.
I'm actually not ready for this. And then where is anybody to help you then? I mean, there's, like, you know, as a single mom myself of two teenage boys, I can tell you how little support there is in the community and society in general to help or give a damn about your situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfair odds.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's, again, it's just this like, let's convince you to have this baby, and it's going to be so great, and, oh, yeah, an infant, they're so cuddly and warm and beautiful, and it just, there's no long-term projection about what it really means to be a parent and a mom and everything that goes with that.
That's an excellent point, Jane. And thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, thanks so much for this conversation today.
We wish we didn't have to have it, but you're welcome.
All right.
Cheers.
Take care.
and it's true. We'll keep having these conversations as long as the legislators keep restricting women's rights. It's really just unthinkable. growing up in the era that I did, you know, I was a kid in the 70s when Roe versus Wade was passed. I worked in abortion clinics in the 80s. And we kind of, you know, abortion clinic workers did not take it for granted because we saw the machinations behind laws that would restrict our rights. But for a lot of young women, there was no consciousness of the long struggle to get abortion into legal status nationally in the first place. And it was just kind of like, oh, of course it is. Of course it's legal. Who would ever think about it? And now to look at, you know, some 25 years later, the restrictions that have gone in, starting with the Webster decision in the early 90s, that state by state, our rights are whittled away. And at this point, I really got to wonder, what good is that constitutional protection? What good is Roe at this point? What protection does it actually offer when state by state we are watching doctors being mandated to lie to their patients? And waiting periods, which are not just an inconvenience. A lot of people think, well, you know, so, you know, if a lot of people who are from urban middle class environments are like, oh, well, you know, so you go to the doctor, you have to go back in 2 days and actually have the procedure, you know. So, well, if you happen to be in a state that has only a couple of providers for the entire state because restrictions have eliminated the rest of them, if you are in a state, say Texas, where you may have to drive 150, 200 miles, then you are looking at the expense of missing work. If you have other children at home, who's looking out for them? The expense of a hotel, the expense of traveling. And these are all undue burdens, especially if the woman is not of middle income already, right? This is really hard hitting for rural women and for women who are struggling economically. So just wanted to, again, talk about it's insidious how waiting periods are really very, very damaging. It's not just allowing a woman to think about her decision.
That is the reason for them, yeah.
It is there to discourage. It is there to really eliminate it as a choice. Because, again, for women who are 200 miles away from the clinic and who are already economically disadvantaged, that is that's really taking it out of the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that said, good morning, Frances. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi. Frances.
This is kind of ironic to me. First of all, I agree. You know, if you're going to insist that someone have a child, then you better be there to help take care of it.
Right.
And that doesn't happen, of course. We talk about people all the time. What is ironic to me is that I just saw recently an article online about how Jeb Bush wrote a book a few years ago. And I don't know what his topic was, but in his book he spoke about how there's not enough shame attached to being an unwed mother, you know.
Oh, right. Thank you.
I have this article in front of me right now. I was about to go to it next, proving that we are so in tune, Frances.
You know, it's because they're not shamed that, you know, it's okay to have babies out of wedlock.
Yep.
You know? I guess recently he tried to clean it up and say he was just concerned about children living without fathers and, you know, I'm living in a single parent home. And I thought, my God, you know.
And he wrote a book? Yeah, right.
Where's the shame in the fact that all these babies' daddies were killed in his family's wars? And
there's that.
Where's the shame in the fact that little, sweet, cuddly, soft babies were killed by our bombs? I mean, where's the shame in all that?
Or have been maimed by
the man is
depleted
shameless.
Uranium.
That's what the word is. It's called shameless, I think.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yes. There's a part of that word missing for him.
As they said in The Princess Bride, I don't think he knows what that means.
No, I don't either. That's all I have to say.
This is from his 1995 book, Profiles in Character. Right?
Give me a freaking break. That. Oh, my nerves and soul.
Yeah, Francis, you
thanks,
take care.
Francis.
Thanks, Francis.
Thanks for opening the path to my next rant, Francis. I love it when we're in tune. Public condemnation and the criminal justice system, sentencing intended to humiliate, never actually went anywhere. So Bush wasn't really calling for a return to humiliation. He just wanted more of it. This is from the Salon.
Humiliations galore.
This is from the Salon article that was put out this week. Here's an excerpt on single parenting, which Huffington Post political reporter Laura Bassett unearthed on Tuesday of this week. And I quote, this is, I think, the passage that that Francis was referring to, because it made my head explode this morning. One of the reasons more young women are giving birth out of wedlock and more young men are walking away from their paternal obligations.
It's not the Boy Scouts?
No, he doesn't blame the Boy Scouts. He blames it on a lack of shame. He says that there is no longer a stigma attached to this behavior. So there's no reason to feel shame. Many of these young women and young men look around and see their friends engaged in the same irresponsible conduct. Their parents and neighbors have become ineffective at attaching some sense of ridicule to this behavior. There was a time when neighbors and communities would frown on out-of-wedlock births, and when public condemnations was enough of a stimulus for one to be careful.
Yeah, that worked really well.
I just got to say, as a kid given up for adoption in the 60s by an unwed teenage mom, I got some stuff to say about that. I got a lot of stuff to say about that. Okay. But I won't right now because we're going to move on. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join us this morning in conversation. We've got the bases loaded. We've got 15 minutes left. Jump on in. The weather's fine. You can also comment on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also follow along on the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. And good morning,
Julie.
Shelly. We've got Shelly.
Yeah. Oh, hi. I just had a couple of thoughts that came to mind just listening to the conversation. And that article on Jeb Bush's comments or his thing on shame, I read that yesterday too, and it was...
How loud did you scream?
I don't know.
I screamed loudly enough that my dog came up to check me out and see if everything was okay.
Yeah, it was outrageous. I
want to have a scream meter. Okay.
On Rick Perry, I don't know, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, but I have heard that his sister is in charge of some of these surgery centers in Texas, and they apparently, you can get an abortion there where poor women, all the clinics that are more affordable or accessible for them, are what are being shut down by the change in the laws there.
Oh, so, that's a surprise.
I think her name is Mila Perry Jones. And she's an executive with the surgery centers. And so I think women with insurance and money can still go in and have an abortion in Texas.
But you may still have to travel a couple hundred miles.
No, yeah. She's saying that there are surgery centers. That's different than what they're shutting down.
Surgery centers, yeah. Not in my understanding.
Okay.
But, okay.
Yeah. So I was trying to get clear on what, why those, anyway, just...
money, that's why.
Yeah, and his sister... her organization stands to profit from it.
There we go.
Yeah. The other thing I've heard and seen studies that the, I think it's something like up to maybe half of the fertilized eggs pass out of a woman's body before they ever implant.
I think it's 80%.
Something like that. It's a huge percentage.
It is more pregnancies end in the first month than women ever know about. Basically how I've seen that put.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, because you see these personhood
exactly
laws where they talk about conception being the beginning of life, so that it doesn't make any sense when in the natural world so many of the fertilized eggs are washed away. If they actually were a person at that point, why would the universe be set up that way? But I just wanted to get put
that's
that
God's plan.
What's that?
That's God's plan.
Yeah. So
I almost wasn't going to say that, but I just couldn't help it.
Yeah, and it's I don't want to offend anybody, but yeah,
no, that, me either.
A good way to think about it, but
not.
Yeah, but it just in terms of the relevance of those laws, when what would be their explanation for basically what happens? I don't know if you'd say God's will or whatever.
No, and it's scary to think about. What, how that would be if we get to that sort of point. It's getting more Handmaid's Tale all the time.
Yeah.
Which, if folks have never read that book, it's chilling and getting to be more and more not science fiction.
Yeah, that's, and yeah, and like you were saying earlier, the number of these laws that are being passed is astounding.
It's overwhelming.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to throw those comments out.
Well, thank you very much for your call today.
Yeah, and thanks for the show today.
Sure, absolutely. I would say our pleasure, except it's just maddening. still, I suppose it's really important that we have this outlet or... Yeah, we'd be apoplectic in the streets, probably. I don't know. And let's go ahead and talk to Michael. Good morning, Michael. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hey, let me get you off the speakerphone.
Very good.
Okay, I've been watching this war for like 30 years, and I'm on the same side of this war that you're on. But if you look at it like a war, it kind of reminds me of, you know, things like World War II, where Japan took a huge amount of territory kind of by accident while the other side was asleep, and then they couldn't really hold on to it. And I'm not saying anything about what should be, because as far as what should be, I'm completely on your side. But, you know, if you look at, like, the course of this war over the last 30 years, it's like our side took a vast amount of territory that we weren't capable of holding, and we're slowly being beaten back by the other side.
Well, I think one of the things that has happened is as Republicans were looking to consolidate power, as conservatives were looking to consolidate power, they put forth a couple of issues, abortion being one of them, that they figured they could make headway on with strong emotional appeals.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
when we started, you know, hearing all about the pain of the fetus and all of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. It's been absolute political strategizing on their behalf. And a lot of not particularly politically active people who believe that women's right to abortion is guaranteed and is sensible, you know, did not get particularly politically active or motivated to
Many of us
join
thought
in the struggle. It was already done, right?
After Roe v. Wade, that things were settled.
Right.
We just didn't notice, as you said.
Yes. Some of us did. But again, that tended to be a really small circle of people that were very involved, either in the actual procedures, you know, those that were working or volunteering for groups like NARAL, groups that were heavily involved this entire time, knowing that we can never rest on our laurels. Or I'm gesticulating and apparently freaking Lynn out just a little bit. I'm all over the place. You know, people that were actually engaged in the providing of abortions, those of us that were clinic workers and that sort of thing, that understood the risks and understood what the other side was maneuvering to do. Most people considered it a done deal. It's obvious. It makes sense. We've now got it guaranteed in the RV Wade decision. So we just move on, right? Well, no, you're exactly right. The other side has been using it as a main political platform for 30 years, and they have made great headway.
Yeah, well, okay. And the reason that I'm thinking about it this way is that if you look at it kind of like a military engagement, our side has been sort of took a huge amount of territory and then has steadily been losing pieces of it,
yep,
for the last 30 years. And when you're in a war and that's the kind of thing that's happening, thinking about it like a war, you got to start deciding, well, this is the territory we can defend where we're strong. This may be the territory that we can't defend because we're not strong there, even though we should be able to, you know, morally speaking. But, you know...
So who gets thrown under the bus?
If you just insist on holding the whole area and never retreating, it might be a way to lose a big piece of the war.
Well, I kind of get what you're saying, but where do you go with that? Excuse me. Where do you... who gets thrown under the bus? Which of the rights do we just go ahead and say, that's sacrificial right now?
You take a look, like, you know, a place like Texas, and you decide... You know, if we spend an enormous amount of resources there, maybe we'll lose anyway. Maybe we'd be better off taking some of those resources and providing a free plane ticket and a hotel room to everybody in Texas that wants an abortion to get to Oregon and have the abortion and fly back.
It's an interesting concept. All right. Michael, thank you very much for your call this morning. We're going to move on. We have Brian on the line and just a few minutes to go. Good morning, Brian.
Oh, good morning. I usually stay out of these discussions as I'm not a woman, but where this is leading is, do you recall in Galway, Ireland, a few years ago, a couple of years ago, there was a woman died, a Hindu woman, because the surgeon refused her an abortion on an already dead fetus, and she died.
Right, I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, this is medieval feudalism, you know, and the Catholic, you know, the Catholic Church's attitude is just go ahead and breed like bloody rabbits on an already overpopulated planet, and. You know, this is, the Mormons do it too, but at least they kind of take care of their own. It's, you know, they never take that sort of thing into consideration in these papal, supposedly progressive pope pronouncements. Ireland's still in that trap, although they're looking at it now since that happened. One of the saddest memories of my life when I lived in Franco's fascist church and military dominated Spain was congratulating guardedly a poor couple that had just had their 10th baby. This was a couple of Andalus peasants, and the woman just wearily looked at me and said, otra boca para dar comer, you know, like God, another mouth to feed.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's leading, I think, and that's all I have to say, really. Thank God God help Texas, or somebody needs to.
Somebody needs to help Texas.
Yeah. The people.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brian.
Sure, bye.
What is actually going on in Texas? I have to say, if you check out democracynow.org and look at yesterday's program, there is a fabulous interview, again, with Heather Busby, the woman that Lynn was quoting earlier, the executive director of NARAL Pro-Choice Texas. And she explains what is going on, basically saying... In 2011, when the legislature cut funding for family planning by nearly two-thirds, they lost over 80 clinics. That's 80 family planning clinics across the state, most of those in rural and underserved areas. So if you can't prevent a pregnancy and then you have an unintended pregnancy and the state has devastated that access, what do you have added up, right? So she goes on to state...
Not enough shame.
Apparently. She says that they've lost more than half of the clinics in the state, and they're looking at going down to only 8 to 10 clinics for the state of Texas. For a state that has 27 million people, it's unacceptable, right? To say the least.
Kansas is down to 3.
So we just sort of have to wrap up, but I do encourage people to check out the Democracy Now! Interview with Heather Busby aired yesterday. You can check out the archive online or read the transcript online. As ruling threatens to gut abortion access in Texas, providers vow to take fight to Supreme Court. So with that, dear listener, we're back. And we hope that you continue to be positively revolting. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. Become a member of KABU if you haven't already. We thank you for having done so during the spring membership drive. But if, in fact, you were resistant, you can take care of that now online, kboo.fm. Support the programming that supports the entire community, won't you?
And stay tuned for the rest of the great morning radio zine.
And we're out.
And it is a half a minute before 9 a.m. on KBOO Portland. Coming up at 9, Lisa Loving will be hosting her new program, Democracy in Motion. And you're going to want to stay tuned for that. I know she's got a guest in the studio today, and she'll tell you all about that in just a few minutes. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, local news hosted by Chris Andre. At 10:15, here are Flashpoints. Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, it's the Digital Divide. Reading the wrong promos. But no, it's still the Digital Divide. We're going to hear an excerpt of an interview with Dr. Robert Wachter, author of Digital Doctor, Hope, Hype, and Harm at the Dawn of Medicine's Computer Age, with guest host Andrew Geller. Thank you, KABU members, for listening. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, KABU members, for your generous support. If you're not a member, you can become one. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Cascadia Solstice Jamboree, June 12 through 14, outside of Houston, Washington. The Jamboree